iGlobal Radio, the hub of podcasts for and about global Indians. From news and views to wellness, entertainment, money matters, and much, much more. On air at iGlobalNews.com.
iGlobalNews.com.
iGlobal Radio, brought to you by iGlobalNews.com.
Hello and welcome to the iMoney Show right here on iGlobal Radio. My name's Tony Patti and today I am joined once again by Bob Singh in our series of programmes. Now Bob Singh is a mortgage and property strategist and an expert in the service as well. And as well as an established and award-winning mortgage broker, he actually has set up lots of different situations and businesses, one of which being an estate agency franchise business offering market-leading solutions to property owners and landlords at significant discounts compared to traditional estate agents. Now, he specializes in commercial real estate, real estate, real estate marketing, real estate appraisals, commercial lending, mortgage lending, property law, property management, financial planning, and financial advisory as well. And he's here with us today to talk about bridging loans and development finance. Now, as I understand it, bridging loans and development finance are both financial terms that offer a solution to someone to help them out financially. That's about all I know about this particular line of business, but the man in the know and the expert is Bob Singh himself. Bob, a very warm welcome to you. Welcome once again to our show today.
Thank you, Tony. Always a pleasure to be here.
Thank you very much indeed. So we're here today to talk about bridging loans and development finance. So what is exactly a bridging loan? And we'll move on then to find out what development finance is as well, because I believe possibly there is a difference, but I'll leave you to explain that.
Yeah. Well, bridging loans until recently were a dirty word in the finance business because they were so expensive and everybody feared them, you know.
Yeah.
The mere mention of bridging loan would sort of send people into a cold sweat. But these days, bridging loans have evolved enormously. There's a lot of competition, and basically it's interim finance.
Okay.
It's to get you over a hurdle, you know, which could be that, you know, you can't get the mortgage from a traditional bank, or the property is not in a great state to be lent on. So you need a lender that will take a risk on it, but they charge you for it. Now, bridging loans historically, as I've said, were very, very expensive ways of borrowing. You know, it was a last resort. If everybody around you said no, you'd go for a bridging loan. But now they're very, very competitive. They are so keenly priced. They're not too far from traditional bank lending, to be honest with you.
Mm.
There's a lot of private money. The thing to remember, Tony, is that bridging loans are not regulated, because bridging lending is normally done on buy-to-lets or commercial property. But some lenders have now started to lend bridging finance or arrange bridging finance on your principal residency. Now, when that happens, it does become regulated in some circumstances. So it's very hard to get sometimes bridging on your main house, but very, very easy on buy-to-lets or commercial property. Because, you know, the market so far is fairly unregulated, so you've got to be careful where you go, what the terms are. There's lots of terms and conditions that the bridging lender imposes on you for lending that money and taking that risk in the first place. So you need a good lawyer to go through the terms and conditions, a good broker to explain them all to you, so you know exactly what you're getting into. Because the last thing you want is to sign on that dotted line, take the money, and not comply with the terms and conditions. And worst of all, not be able to pay them back. So before going into a bridging loan, Tony, I always say, how are you going to come out of it? Yeah, what's the exit? Because that's the most important thing. It's not getting the loan that's hard. That's the easy bit. The hard bit is convincing the lender that you are actually going to be able to pay their money back.
Indeed.
So, yeah. So are you going to sell the property after maybe refurbishing it? Are you extending it and maybe converting it into a HMO, for example? In which case, the exit would be a refinance. Yeah, it'd be a refinancing through another mainstream lender, because that lender can now lend on that property because it's now in good condition. It's not vacant anymore. For example, if it was a shop, you know, it's now let, it's on a good secure lease. So we look at the end picture to make sure not only can we get you in, we can get you out.
I'm understanding that. So when going to a lender for a bridging loan, security and an exit strategy plan needs to be in place, as you've explained to us so well. So Depending on how much equity you have in assets to use as security, what money is actually going to be used and how much can one borrow? Depending, of course, on how much the lender is willing to let you borrow in the first place.
Of course. Yeah, the good thing about bridging, it's non-regulated, It's not affordability-based, okay? What the bridging lender is primarily looking at is the asset. What is it? Where is it? What sort of condition is it in? And what are your plans for it? Because the more works you plan to do the property, the higher the perceived risk. So if you're knocking walls and chimney breasts out and you're extending it into the loft, you know, some things may need planning permission and building regulations. So the more tinkering you do, the more risk the lender sees themselves in, because something could go wrong and they may be left with a building site to take over. And that's what they don't want. They want the person going in to be experienced, knowledgeable. But lenders do not take big risks in bridging.
Mm.
They rarely go over sort of 70-75% of value. And they don't base it on market value in most cases. They go on a 90-day figure. So what would it be valued at if we really had to shift this property in the auctions or whatever? What could we get for it? And then they lend 70-75% of that figure, which is often lower. So again, the market is evolving all the time. There are lenders now that will lend on market value as well. So, you know, we see many situations. We have to assess how to get the most money for the client. But 70-75% is the normal. But if you're prepared to pledge additional security, like another property which doesn't have a big mortgage on it, or your main residence, for example, then you can even get 100%. So you don't have to put a penny in to buy something, which is why it's widely used.
Yeah.
Because banks aren't going to lend you 100%. No way. They're all sitting at 60-65% at the moment in most scenarios.
Yes.
So bridging lenders will lend more, but you pay more.
Log on to iGlobalNews.com. iGlobal, the go-to multimedia platform for and about global Indians.
iGlobal Radio is the brand new hub of podcasts for and about global Indians. News, views, interviews, wellness, money matters, and much, much more. Tune in to iGlobal Radio at iGlobalNews.com. Bob, as a mortgage and property expert person that you are, and also personal finance is something that you look at, and along with your business, Chess Mortgages, and My Move Estate Agency, there must have been ups and downs that you've seen in the property market. Is there such a thing as a choice to defer paying the interest until the end of the loan? And do additional fees apply, such as valuation, arrangement, and legal fees? Are these to be added on to what is owed where this particular scenario is concerned?
Very good question, Tony, because people don't understand this. So let's explain that to everyone listening. Charges do apply. Interest does apply. Mm. Now, because I've said bridging lenders are taking a higher risk in lending you the money, they really cover their back. Now, they will employ their own lawyer, typically, for which you pay for. They will employ their own surveyor, so you have to pay for that as well. And they'll charge a handsome arrangement fee as well. So the fees are not cheap, but they get you to where you want to be. And the fees are pretty much industry-wide standard. Anywhere between 1% and 2% of the loan is the arrangement fee. And the point of interest is a very good one that you've raised, because with a bridging loan, you make no monthly payments. And why is that? Because they take the interest up front. So if you've taken a one-year bridging loan, they'll work out what you owe them over that particular year, over that 12-month period, and deduct it from their 70 or 75% lending. So you get back maybe sort of 10% less, because the annual rate is about 10%, but you make no payments. So in effect, you've made your payments up front for a whole year. So you haven't got to worry about that. Your main concern is paying it back at the end or before of month 12. Now, having taken a 12-month loan, it doesn't mean you need to keep it 12 months. You can repay early, and most good bridging lenders refund any unused complete month of interest. For example, if you manage to do your project and sell the property, say, within 9 months, you would get 3 months back if you took a 12-year product. So, you know, there's a bit of money coming back to you at the end of the deal as well.
Yeah.
And bridging loans are available for 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, you know, whatever period you think you can come out by. But always take a bit extra. That's my advice. Never underestimate, because things can go wrong in projects and developments. Mm. I mean, look what's happening now in the construction sector. Prices are rising. There's no labor available sometimes.
Material costs are rising as well.
Rising, yeah. And, you know, things can take longer. You know, you might not get delivery of certain materials in time. So it's always best to add on another 3 months than you realistically need. So you're giving yourself some leeway, because terms have to be adhered to. If you break those terms, it becomes very painful. Yeah, lenders are at liberty to charge default penalties, maybe take legal action if you're not really following the terms. So you've got to be very careful and play within the rules, because bridging lenders want their money back, and they want it back when you say you're going to give it back. Yeah.
Log on to iGlobalNews.com. iGlobal, the go-to multimedia platform for and about global Indians.
We are talking to Bob Singh from Chess Mortgages and My Move Estate Agents. And Bob Singh is a mortgage and property expert. We understand that a bridging loan is a great financial solution, but it is for something which is short term, which you've explained briefly to us here today. Just how short term or long term can a bridging loan be?
Okay, term loans are rarely over 18 months. They're not meant to be long term loans because they're so expensive. You know, anybody doing a project will know that they really want to be in and out as soon as possible. They want to be dragging on that project for a year or more, because it, you know, adds to the financial cost. 18 months is the absolute maximum they'll consider, but generally people go for 6 or 9 months, because most, you know, refurbishment projects can be sort of sorted out in that time. And whilst the works are going on, we're working in the background to get the exit strategy sorted. So whether that's a remortgage for the buy-to-let or the HMO or a commercial loan. So, you know, well, we know we've got you the money for the actual purchase of the asset. We're now working in the background trying to repay that loan before the due date so that you're not penalised.
So as we talk about bridging loans, we also talked about development finance as well. Is that slightly different to a bridging loan? And if so, how is it different?
A development loan, yes, slightly different in the fact that development loans are, again, seen as the next rung up in terms of risk perception. Because when it comes to development, there's foundations involved, you know, there's construction. So there's lots more going on a particular site under a development deal. Firstly, the foundations, then maybe the up to the first floor level, then second, for example. The loan isn't given to you upfront in that scenario. It's agreed up front, so they know what you're going to have to pay for that project, because you've entered into a contract with a builder, a joint contract terms contract, which is assignable to the lender. So they know what you're going to spend on that project, where the money's going to go, because you've given them an itemized expenses schedule. And they'll release that money to you on completing each stage. And you only pay interest on what you've taken. And so, you know, for all of the project, you're not paying interest on all of the loan all the time, because the last tranche may only be outstanding for a few months, and the first tranche may be outstanding for 18 months. So it's a pay-as-you-go sort of a facility.
Yeah.
And the good thing is, if you're on time, you'll get the monies paid to you after inspection, because the banks send out inspectors. They want to make sure you're doing the work to a good quality, a good standard.
Yes.
And it's on time. So they'll look at, they'll liaise with your architects and builders and make sure things are hunky-dory. And if it is, you'll get the monies paid to you as soon as you complete that stage. So you can pay your suppliers and your builders to, you know, for the work they've done. So this is how typically a development finance is structured.
Log on to iGlobalNews.com. iGlobal, the go-to multimedia platform for and about global Indians.
iGlobal is one-of-a-kind multimedia platform for all things global Indian, from the latest community news to the big political interviews, from entertainment and fashion to personal wealth and wellness. iGlobal is where the vibrant Indian diaspora gets seen and heard. Log on at iGlobalNews.com. to be able to develop or refurbish a property, whether it be residential, commercial, or a variety, is there such a thing as a minimum loan which is available, and perhaps, may I say, maximum length to pay the loan back? Are there such statistics that we can go by?
Yeah, because we're in this field. I mean, most bridging loan lenders don't really get out of bed unless you're borrowing 50,000 plus.
Okay.
You know, it's just not worth the while to give you 5,000 or 10,000 pounds to do a project.
Right.
You know, it's the same amount of work for a 50,000 facility as it is for a 500,000 or a 5 million pound facility. So they sort of set their bar at around 50,000 pounds starting point, but there's no maximum. You know, if you're doing a mega, mega project, then we have lenders that will lend you 50 million, 100 million. But generally, you know, it's less than that. So, you know, 1 million, 2 million is where most small developers sit. But there's no limit because there's money in the marketplace. Hmm. And if it's super big, you get what we call syndication going on. Two lenders might come in,
okay,
and spread the risk and give you the money. I mean, it happens, but not very often, because you've really got to go up over a massive figure for that to happen. But generally, we can cope with most of the transactions if they have the experience, because the key thing with this is, have you done it before? What are your credentials? Show us your portfolio of projects. You know, what have you done? What did you anticipate the costs to be? What were the costs actually? And why was there a variance? And did you manage to exit in time? Or was there any issues? Had you overcooked your end values estimation, your GDV, your gross development value figure? Because, you know, we can all be optimistic and overestimate what we think is going to be worth at the end of the day, you know, because we see pound signs in our eyes, and we think, yeah, we're going to make £200,000 on this deal. It may not happen. So with these sort of deals, you've got to be very realistic, very pessimistic, and if it turns out to be better, all well and good. But caution is the key word here.
Log on to iGlobalNews.com. iGlobal, the go-to multimedia platform for and about global Indians.
We are talking to Bob Singh, who is a mortgage and property expert from Chess Mortgages and My Move Estate Agents. And we are talking about business development, and we're talking about the difference between bridging loans and development finance as well. So, Bob, you explained development finance, and before that, we're talking about bridging finance as well. And the smaller loans, I understand, as you mentioned, start around about £50,000. And what about the interest rates? Because the loan above a certain amount ranges from what to what in terms of interest rates? And does it also depend on the experience of the developer and the gross development value, which you were talking about? Is there such a figure that we can put to that?
Yes. Excellent question, Tony. Rates, as I've said, have actually come down over the last 4 or 5 years, principally due to the competitiveness of the market and the attractiveness of property as an investment to most people. And because when prices are going up, lenders see themselves less at risk because their assets are increasing in value all the time.
Because the property value in essence is high as well. So they feel that they've invested in something which is tangible.
Absolutely. There's good equity in that. But rates vary from anywhere from 0.5% a month up to, say, 1% a month. And there's a vast difference because factors like GDV, experience, risk, type of property, all come into play when a rate is decided. So the lower the risk, the more likely it's to be towards the 0.5% a month mark. The less equity, the less experience, the more high risk, the more it's likely to veer to the right, and you'll pay something like 0.8 to 1% a month interest on that loan. So, you know, you can effectively pay double the cost if you're not putting so much money into the deal yourself. If it's 100% funding, that's very high risk for the bank because you're not putting anything in. You know, you don't stand to lose much, except you've given security to cover that loan amount. You're not losing any physical cash, which you would be if it was a standalone asset that you were buying. You've really got to make sure, yes, you've got enough money to buy the asset. You've got enough money to develop the asset, and that can be from savings as well. You don't have to borrow if you don't need to, but it's good to have that facility there because should something go wrong, should disaster strike, you're not stuck alone out there with no sort of help at all. You've got a bit of a reserve to fall back on, and that's always a good thing when it comes to property development.
Bob, is there such a thing as, using a bridging loan or development finance for different purposes? And if so, is there a list that you could give us from the top of your head?
Bridging is really short term. So it used to be the case where you were selling your main house.
Yeah.
And you wanted to buy the next house but hadn't sold your old house. Bridging loan used to be used for that purpose. It's evolved over the last decade into buying properties on a standalone basis. Very few companies were in the frame 15, 20 years ago when I was first in the business. Now there's hundreds and thousands of them. But bridging is, as I've said, meant to be short-term. Don't borrow long-term on bridging finance. It's not very frugal to do so. But generally, bridging now is used for by toilets and commercial property. And development is for new builds or major refurbishment projects. Because if you're knocking walls down, extending, and that sort of thing, that's perceived to be slightly higher risk. So that falls under the heavy refurb or development side of the fence. And if it's a new kitchen, new bathroom, no walls being changed or anything like that, that falls under standard or light refurbishment.
Yeah.
So the rates for that are slightly cheaper. Again, the bigger the deposit, the better the rate.
And how do I go about applying for them, whether it be a bridging loan or development finance? Is the process straightforward?
It's very straightforward, yeah. Much, much straightforward than a standard residential or buy-to-let mortgage. But the mechanics are exactly the same. We need to meet you over Zoom or a face-to-face meeting now. We need to go through what your goals are, what you're trying to achieve, how much reserves you have and what other assets you have that we can maybe put into the mix to get the right deal for you. If that all is all okay, then we make the application to a lender that we think will deliver. And bridging lenders are non-regulated. So you've really got to be careful which lender you go to.
Yes.
Because we've known circumstances where a bridging loan offer has been given. And then when the day has come that the funds are needed, the offer has been withdrawn because that bridging lender has run out of money. Because most bridging lenders don't use their own money. They tend to borrow it from private investors.
I see.
People who save money with them, give them a nice return in, you know, of what they give to them, and they lend it on at a profit. It's not always their own money. And smaller lenders who are not well capitalized could well run out of money and not deliver on the day.
Indeed.
So, you know, you need a good broker to go to a lender who has performed in the past, who has that liquidity and financial strength. But we do all the paperwork. We arrange literally everything for you. You sit back and relax. We take the stress away. There is a fee for arranging the bridging loan, which varies on a case-to-case basis. But we'll discuss that with you upfront so there are no nasty surprises. And that's only taken if we get you the mortgage offer. But it's not much paperwork. There's no credit underwriting. We're not looking at proving your payslips and V60s because it's an asset we're looking at, not your ability to repay the loan, because there's no repayments. The interest is taken up front. You don't make any monthly payments at all, but you are expected to redeem that loan on the due day.
Thank you for listening to iGlobal Radio, the hub of podcasts for and about global Indians. Find out more on iGlobalNews.com. iGlobalNews.com.
Bob Singh, you are a mortgage and property expert from Chess Mortgages and My Move Estate Agents. If people want to get in touch with you about bridging finance and development loans, as we have discussed today, how can they go about getting in touch with you and getting more advice?
Yeah, I'd love to hear from you. My email address is bob.singh@chessmortgages.co.uk, and my mobile number is 07 949 201 200. So I'm available most of the day, so either email me or WhatsApp me, and we'd love to discuss your deals with you and help you get that bridging loan or the development loan, whichever is more appropriate to your circumstances.
Please note, past performance is not a guarantee of future performance. All investments can fall as well as rise in value, and you can lose some or all of your money. Additionally, this podcast does not constitute an investment recommendation.
iGlobal Radio, the hub of podcasts for and about global Indians. From news and views to wellness, entertainment, money matters, and much, much more. On air at iGlobalNews.com. iGlobalNews.com.